Ashanti is a New York City-based activist, organizer, writer, and storyteller. He's the Northeast Regional Coordinator of Critical Resistance, which is an abolition movement in opposition to the prison industrial complex. He's also a member of Estación Libre, a people of color U.S.-based organization which organizes solidarity visits to Zapatista-controlled Chiapas for other people of color. He's also a member of Blacks Against the War. Ashanti's been an anarchist for over a decade and self-publishes an occasional zine called The Anarchist Panther.
All right, I'm just standing up for a minute because I'm letting loose a lot of butterflies that are in my stomach. And the butterflies are going out right now, and they're going to each of you individually. I want you to make sure that you take that butterfly home and preserve that butterfly, take care of it, love it, everything like that, all right? Thank you. I needed that just to calm down. All right, power to the imagination of the anarchists. Power to the people, power to the people. I am happy to be here in Montreal, and I thank the organizers of Book Fair for inviting me. Man, I'm not nervous anymore now. I want to just talk, I know I'm going to try to compact a lot of things into my message, but I want to talk a little bit about like where I'm coming from in New York City. Working primarily with Blacks Against the War, but some of the other organizations I work with will tie into this. Blacks Against the War was just formed maybe 4 months ago. And one of the reasons Blacks Against the War came together was because black folks was trying to participate in some of the broader anti-war coalitions, were dealing with a lot of racism within them coalition, and got real frustrated with it. A lot of white liberals were running the organizations, and our issue was just, they wasn't there. No one was speaking to our concerns. And so folks was like, well, we need to do our own thing. And so our group came together, and there was actually another group, there is actually another group called Black Solidarity Against the War in New York, too. But unique about our group is that we are organizing our group in as anti-authoritarian manner as possible, all right? And what we're trying to focus on is not just to find ways for black people to express their opposition to the war, but we want the anti-war movement in general and other people to just remember that there's always a war on us. There's always a war on black people and people of color and poor people in the United States. And we want to make that this whole thing twofold. Not only what they're doing in Iraq and whatever the next country is going to be, but what happens to us is continuous, generation after generation after generation. So our concerns, you know, are quite different a lot of times than other populations. So we actually had a successful march and demo early April. I don't remember the date because even though I helped organize it, it was the same time that Critical Resistance had a conference down south, and I had to be at Critical Resistance. But 2,000 people came out. It was held in Harlem, and Harlem is like a historic black community in New York City that has all kinds of cultural significance for black people all over the world. And it showed that there are people in our community who are very much against the war. But it's different than right after 9/11. Now, I'm going to tell you, like, after 9/11, I was, like, hurt. I was crushed. My heart was, like, bleeding because black people and Latino people were holding up the American flag, you know? And in my mind, I'm like, I don't know what the hell you got all of this patriotism going, because you just came out of 400 years of oppression and slavery. You just cried about an election that this so-called president stole. How all of a sudden now you're going to be supporting this president and a knucklehead mayor who has just militarized your city? You know, so in them conversations, a lot of times you have to bring your people back to reality, because what you're doing is combating the constant media assault on their memories, which is what's causing this form of amnesia. So like as an activist, and especially, you know, for me as an anarchist, you know, I want to challenge that. I want folks to like think about what you're doing. Those of us who came together in Blacks Against the War, I mean, a lot of us, or anti-authoritarian. Others was just getting involved for the first time because they were just really upset about the war. But they was also upset about how what was going on in our communities was being ignored by everybody was running to rallies and demos and marches. Because at the same time that the anti-war movement is building, they are slashing daycare, they are slashing services, other services to black and poor communities. The gentrification goes on and on. They're taking over our neighborhoods. And at a certain point during this so-called war, the U.S. prison population tipped over 2 million, a significant amount, which is black, Latino, Native American, and other poor people. So there's a war. And how is that? I think it's in our last, in our most recent issue of Anarchist Perspectives, which I hope is going to be on one of the tables tomorrow, right? Howard Zinn is talking about, like, one of the things that happens during war is that the rich take from the poor, you know? So that direct connection is there, and that's definitely what was happening in New York City. So anyhow, what we're looking for in Blacks Against the War is, one, how to relate to the larger anti-war movement, which is predominantly white, and it's predominantly people who have an agenda that usually leaves us out, and then also how to create forms of struggle in the black community so that we can find some ways to express our opposition. And we're looking for that, all right? And we're trying to be creative about it, and just to focus on the word create, being creative, we're trying to use our best imaginations to come up with some forms of struggle that maybe don't involve getting out in the street marching, that maybe don't involve holding up a placard, you know, with something that says, I'm against the war, I'm against Bush. Because a lot of our people are not doing that. And that doesn't make them ignorant, that doesn't make them uninformed. It just means that they don't necessarily relate or come to those forms of struggle. So we need to be a little bit more open-minded and say, okay, what is it that we do? Or what can we help to create to make some of this hidden, submerged anger, frustration, and even forms of resistance rise to the top? We want to focus on media, right? We want to focus on how this media shapes people's consciousness. It's not the same as maybe 30, 40 years ago. It's not the same as us just handing flyers that says, Bush is this, the capitalist system is that, it's about oil, because people basically know that stuff. So reading is not necessarily the thing that's going to make people say, okay, now that I got the facts, I got the truth, now the next step for me to do is to become a revolutionary. It just don't work that way, all right? There's got to be other ways where we ground that information or we try to get people to see, like, why is it's imperative for them to not just sit back and feel like there's nothing that they can do. Also, we're trying to focus on just how commodification affects our people's consciousness and our those blocks to us actually going forward. Our situation, I mean, I always think that when someone from another country comes to New York City and they read all of this about black people, you know, being poor and oppressed. But yet, if you come to our communities, you see brand new cars, you see people with Nikes and Jordans and stuff. You look at them and say, man, these people can't be oppressed. They got the latest stuff, you know? So for me, it means that something different is happening in our oppression. This is not the oppression of Iraq. This is not the oppression of Latin America or Africa. Our oppression is markedly different. All right, we come from the richest country in the world that is, it has the ability to make us close down certain sensitivities to oppression, that make us be willing to trade in freedom for security, and we do it just as much as anybody else, right? Black people in the United States will also vote, those who do vote, you know, for more police in the community. Even though it's very irrational for us, because the police is part of them occupying troops, that's keeping you down. But yet, we still feel a certain patriotism, and how did we get that way? So it means that there's got to be some other ways that we analyze our situation that bring out some possible tools, some possible ways, different ways of organizing that is markedly different from what we're used to doing. So maybe it isn't all the old forms of revolution that we're used to. Maybe there's also all kind of ways that people are resisting in our communities that we just really don't focus on. Maybe it isn't us coming with the correct forms, the correct analysis. Maybe we need to really draw on what's already happening there and offer what we think that we have that's valuable. Because what we're usually going to, I think we're going to find the same thing what happened with Marcos and then went into Chiapas with the Marxist, Leninist, Maoist right answer and had to be told by the Mayans, like, yo, y'all got to take that shit somewhere else. You know, we already got a way of doing things. Now, if you think you got something to help us, put it on the table, but we'll let you know. You know? So I think a lot of what we got can come like that, because of course we got something to offer. Anarchists definitely got something to offer. We're talking about democracy. We're talking about, and everywhere I go, I mean, we're talking about anti-racist work, anti-sexist work, anti-homophobic work, those things that go on internally within our spaces that are helping us to create the kind of society that we want now. And one of my favorite words is what Cindy always talked about, prefigurative actions. You know, we got to do those things that actually are going to build the kind of society that we want. So when we see things like Seattle was a big turning point for me, because I'm like, though I have been in this movement since 17, and my comrade Bo over here, we know we was like real youngsters back then. We ain't too young no more, you know. But it's like, you know, it's like we still have to do things that says we can create this world, but we got to start now, all right? So here's anarchists who are creating forms of internal struggle that is about democracy, that is about being sensitive to who we shut down within our circles. And I saw some of that, like, after Seattle, and I haven't participated in shutting down the Republican convention. Not that we shut it down, but the action was great. And even though I couldn't participate in some of the more aggressive actions, because they had me confined to this little makeshift hospital. You know, that's what they do with the elders nowadays. You can only be in the little makeshift hospital. You can't get out there with the young folks, you know. But I'm trying to get in shape now because I want to be on some other future things, you know. Anyhow, but the spokes council method showed me a lot. I had been reading, I had been studying, trying to find forms that create the kind of society we want through what we do. And I saw within the spokes council that people were trying to practice democracy. And one of the particular things is that when those of us black folks and people of color who were coming into it, we had to demand that the organizers make sure our voices was heard. That insurrection of subjugated voices that usually had been silenced in other typical forms. That was very important. So this is like, okay, we're going to create the kind of democracy we're talking about right now. We're going to make sure that our voices, and there was a back and forth struggle, and it has to be, because we all are battling old patterns that are used to shutting each other out. And at the same time that we're making sure our voices is there, the women and the queers within our group were making sure that we wasn't shutting them out as the men. As, you know, men bring the brainiacs and stuff, we always want to be in the leadership and stuff. So all these different things are in place to make sure that we're trying to practice as best we can. And of course we make mistakes, but as best we can, the kinds of democratic forms that we think will work after we bring down this monster. And that also showed me that, you know, we can care about each other within these circles, that we can look after each other in these circles, that we can defend each other. Because one of the things that I did get a chance of, not at this particular action, was in de-arresting somebody. I thought this was the greatest thing in the world that I had ever seen. You mean to tell me we're going to actually go and get that person from the police? So one time I had a chance to participate in that. You know, after my comrade had gloriously punched the police in the mouth, right? And then we had to pull him after they maced him. And so some of us said, that's it, let's go get him. And we actually got him out of there and got him away, you know, and he never did get arrested. And that showed me, yeah, we can do this. We got the kind of creativity and we got the kind of courage that we can make these things happen. So it's like we can win. You know, just the whole thing about We Can Win is the biggest struggle for me in the black community with the Blacks Against the War is that we have to convince our people that we can win. And maybe us too. Maybe sometimes we don't admit it, but even us. I mean, we say the rhetoric, but do we really believe we can win? I know that for me, and I know that from listening to Bo, that even in our underground experiences, we know we can win. We know what our enemies are like on the other end of the gun. We know what they're like when we have the power on them, all right? And it's a great feeling. I understand what Frantz Fanon says when he says that, he says violence is a liberating force. But if you take away violence and you just say assertion is a liberating force, standing up for your rights is a liberating force with your enemies, it's the same effect when you can stand up successfully to your enemy. A lot of internal chains drop. We want to try to create situations with Blacks Against the War where that same thing happens, even if it's small. We're not trying to do grand and big things, but we want to try to create those kind of psychological experiences, emotional experiences, spiritual, if you want to call them, you know, that we have a lot of this stuff is on us. I got my 2 minutes, all right, I'm on it. I really am at the end. So there's things that help us. Cultural things help us to draw on our cultures, on our present cultures, whether it's a black culture, whether it's a hip hop culture, whether it's the queer culture, whether it's the women's culture. There's things in them that are about resistance, that are about keeping hope, you know, nourished and growing. All right? And then there's the actual preparation to make them steps to do, to put ideas into practice. I think there's a line, though, when you get to that point. And it can be imaginary line for now, but it's like that point, there's a line that you have to cross, and you know you have to cross, but you're scared to death. And I tell people, like me being in a men's group, it's the third men's group I'm in, all right? And it's the hardest struggle in the world. And I also tell people I would rather go back to hitting them banks than to deal with anti-sexist work. Because it's the hardest, scariest work in the world. But it's the most necessary kind of work that I can be doing. Because if I can build those kind of good relationships with my comrades, then I know that we're building power. But if I still let all that stuff go and still hang on to my sexist ways and stuff, I'm going to frustrate the kind of work that we can do, whether it's stopping the war or whether it's just building some community institutions that are about power and liberation. So we're already a few steps ahead as anarchists. I think we are way ahead of a lot of people, and definitely even from the 60s. We're way ahead because we got a lot of different information and knowledges and practices. We just have to do. We have to relate to people. We have to develop them kinds of mechanisms within our own circles that help us to get rid of our own internalized oppression. And I think that's where it's at. And I was telling someone earlier today, the thing I missed from the 60s, the most from being in the Panther Party, was the day-to-day action with folks that we really did go into communities and talk with people, not talk to people, but talk with people, and build institutions or forms of struggle with people. Today, we just used to the flyers, say come to our rally, come to our demo, come to our forum, but won't just really cross that line and meet people. We won't deal with our own alienation, the old fact of it. So that's our challenge, I think. And like I said, I think that we are already steps ahead because right now, anarchists are the ones more likely than others to deal with the stuff that we have internalized of this system that can just bring us down. Okay? And that's it. Thank you.